Welcome, listeners, to a brand new bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast. Today we've got such a special guest. I'm so excited. And once you're going to hear this guest speak, you're like, wow, that's so amazing. I wish I could hear this voice forever. And you actually sort of can, at least a little bit over 9 hours worth, and then you can listen to it again and again, because we have with us Nathan Weiland, who is the voice of the Heart of a Hunter, End of Ever After audiobook, which is now available for everyone to go get. So once you finish listening to this, and then you look up Nathan, and you get so amazed with all of his greatness, then you can go buy the audiobook and just listen to him over and over again. So with that intro, Nathan, welcome to the podcast.
Glad to be here.
I'm so glad to have you. And okay, I gotta put in one more plug. It's such a good audiobook, everyone. I listened to it a few times because, you know, all the corrections and stuff like that. It's fantastic. Everyone just listen to it. Okay. So with that said, how did you even get into this? Was doing an audiobook something that you always, like, I will be a voice actor person and always do audiobooks? Or is this something that you sort of fell into? Like, how did you even get to this point?
I started off as a stage actor. I picked up acting in high school and just sort of decided that was what I wanted to do. And by the time I got out of college, it was pretty apparent that there weren't actually a whole lot of avenues you could go as a stage actor, even in a city like Chicago, where I live, and expect to keep a roof over your head consistently or without, you know, constant stress. And as it turns out, voice acting is a booming industry, and it's definitely preferable to slogging across town day in, day out, hunting up auditions or dealing with agency after agency, trying to get onto TV shows or things like that, and being able to basically do all of that stuff from home. And my own personal little quirk on the subject is that I'm the kind of actor who wants to play everybody. So when you do an audiobook, you literally have to be everyone. So yeah, the thing also is I've been reading books aloud to myself for my entire life. So it just sort of seemed like a natural fit. And yeah, a few years after I graduated, I hooked myself up with a professional VO coach and got a couple of demos recorded and started hunting around looking up for work. And ACX was one of the first places that I ended up checking out. I've done a few books through them before, and it's a process that I really, really enjoy.
Wow. So did you go to college specifically for acting or drama or anything like that? Or
I got my bachelor's in acting from Columbia College.
Ah, that's interesting what you said about Chicago, because the one other person I know who did, I think she went to a conservatory in Chicago, and she made it seem like you got like a full theater row, like tons of theaters in Chicago.
Oh yeah, there are tons and tons of theaters in Chicago. The problem is, while there are tons and tons of theaters in Chicago, there are about 10 times as many actors.
Right.
My favorite story was the first day I arrived at Columbia for my first day at acting school, as it were. I remember walking into the orientation room, and the head of the department is standing at the far end of the room, and he's looking around at all the new arrivals, everyone who is there for their very first day, and says, so how many people are directing students? A couple people raised their hand. Said, you guys are pretty much set. Everyone needs directors. They're always in high demand. So, you know, just get through college. You guys should be fine. How many people are tech crew people? About half the room raises their hand, and he says, you guys are set. Tech crew people are always in demand. You know, you're always going to be able to find work because people are always going to need lights put up and sound run and things like that. And then he turns to the rest of the room and says, so the rest of you must be actors.
Oh.
they laid it out pretty straight. The truth of the matter is that only about 3 out of 100 actors in any given class of college students ever becomes so successful an actor, especially as a stage actor, that's the only thing they're going to be doing for work in their career. It's incredibly, incredibly difficult to be successful as an actor and only as an actor. It's a rewarding job if you are up for that sort of thing, but it is extremely difficult to be successful. You know, I think everyone imagines going to acting school that they're going to be a star. And I mean, yeah, it's definitely helpful to go out there with that kind of attitude. But, yeah, you know, statistically, there are tens of thousands of actors, and more often than not, especially for the really good gigs, you know, you're dealing with a lot of competition, and it's very hard to get the parts you want. It's not easy to make a living that way. Being a voice actor, it's a little different because you can do a whole lot more than just work in a theater or work on a TV set.
Right. That actually doesn't sound so different from being a writer, like a novelist versus like a tech writer or something like that. Yeah, that's interesting. So what other options for a voice actor that I guess I assume would include commercials or or radio spots, or kind of what does that field kind of look like?
Well, there are so many things that voice actors end up getting used for, and a lot of them are things that most people don't even really realize requires a voice actor. I mean, think about this. Have you ever done any kind of corporate training class where you had to sit through a couple of videos of someone talking through rules, regulations, or parts of an employee handbook? They had to hire a voice actor for that.
Right.
And so, you know, there's things like that, which in VO they typically call things like e-learning courses, where you're presenting material for a company or a school or someone who just needed a voice behind the words that they're putting up on screen for someone to look at. Obviously, yeah, there's always going to be things like radio, movies, TV, commercials, all those things. The video game industry is also a pretty big market for that as well. One of the largest growing sectors of the VO industry right now is actually localization for foreign shows like anime. There are a lot of actors who are making themselves very well known for picking up characters in animes that have been coming over in the last 5 or 6 years. And yeah, there's no end of a market for that sort of thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of half of those things. Wow. Okay, this is a total side question. Do you find with either for yourself or fellow voice actors, when you're not recording, are you necessarily yes or no, like a talkative person or not? Or are you like, I have done enough talking for today, I will not speak for the next 10 hours?
As anyone who has spent a significant amount of time in my presence knows, I'm one of those people who, if you let me, I will fill any void with words just to kill the silence. I am capable of being quiet. I just prefer not to most of the time.
Because sometimes you're like, if I have to look at another word or write another word, like I will smash my computer. But I guess you're not feeling that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know necessarily I'm the norm for voice actors, but it was my experience in college that actors in general have a tendency to be talkative.
That actually kind of makes sense, because it's all about living like a persona, I guess. So not necessarily like a fake way, but it's all about like bringing things to life. So you can't do that if you're not talking.
you know? Talking is the heart of what we do. So
yeah. Good point. So now switching over, when you're looking at audiobooks and you're considering to take on a new project, are you looking for anything specifically? Or are you just kind of scrolling through and like, well, let's see what that one is. Let's see what that one is.
Sometimes it varies. I remember the very first series I ever did, I was looking for something sort of in the sci-fi fantasy genre. That's really my milieu. My favorite works are things in that genre. I have done a couple of others, but yeah, I mean, usually when I'm scrolling through, I think the very first few times that I was going through, I was just sort of looking for anything because I didn't quite know where I would fit in on the scale of what kind of books work for my voice. But I kind of had this inkling that sci-fi fantasy was probably the way I wanted to go with that sort of thing. So I'd look around for stuff like that. That's usually my first choice if I have a choice. The next tier on choices is whatever pays the most.
Yeah, still sounds like writing. No kidding. So when you do get the book, or especially if you're talking about fantasy or sci-fi, those are usually very, you know, if it's a decently written book, it's a very rich world with a lot of characters. So what is your approach when you're going to record now? You read through, you annotate, you start developing characters in your mind of how they look, or how do you approach that?
Well, unless I get very specific notes about how a person or character or, you know, in the case of a sci-fi, like an alien or something like that, is supposed to sound or behave, unless there are very clear cues written into the text or the author very specifically tells me I need them to sound a certain way or use a certain accent or whatever, in a lot of ways, I don't really know what I think they're going to sound like until I start trying to work through their lines. And part of that is just sort of a process of natural evolution. What I tend to do when I settle down to do a recording is sometime beforehand, not long beforehand, I try to read through whatever portion I'm going to work on at that point and read it out loud and see what sounds right or what feels right as I'm going through it. And in a lot of ways, like I said, unless someone has given me pretty clear direction on what someone is supposed to sound like, a lot of it's just gut instinct. You know, you have tougher characters, you know, you obviously want to give them something that immediately suggests to a listener that that's what they are. You have more annoying characters. I have a small handful of voices that I reach for someone who's supposed to be deliberately obnoxious.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, I have a small, I guess you'd call it a bag of tricks or a small set of voices that I use for sort of archetypal characters that are obvious. Yeah. But when it comes to, especially, you know, books with a large cast, especially if a lot of them recur, sort of making it up as I go, but also trying to really get an idea of how a character fits into the moment that they're in and making sure that people understand, because, you know, they don't necessarily have the book right in front of them. So it, in a lot of ways, I have to explain to them what this character is supposed to be like, even if they don't really have any way of referring back to it. So, yeah, I mean, it... One of the things that they do teach you to do pretty quickly in college for acting is how to analyze and decide, basically, how to make choices for a character rapidly. And yeah, that's sort of just what I end up finding myself doing most of the time, just making choices on the fly and hoping that they work. And sometimes they do, and sometimes authors are like, you know, that wasn't quite right. We need to try something else.
Yeah. Kind of like improv, but not really like improv, but sort of like improv.
Yeah.
How do you remember the different voices that you do? Because even when I was listening, I was like, I don't even remember what voice this character has. And then once you read it, I was like, oh yeah, that is the voice that he has. Like, how do you remember them?
Well, in the case of Heart of a Hunter, I actually referred back a few times to previous recordings because I wanted to make sure I was getting it right, because there were a few characters that, especially among the dwarves, that had very similar sounding voices, but I wanted to make sure that each one of them sounded unique. So there were a couple of times, particularly for Cardin and some of the other non-leader dwarves, that I had to go back and just make sure I was using the right specific voice. A lot of times, I guess it sort of just comes naturally, because like I said, I'm sort of making their voices up as I go.
Right.
And so sort of once I've sort of made some of those choices for a character, it just sort of becomes a natural part of my memory of who and what they are. So it sort of comes back pretty quickly. And yeah, but I mean, like if I'm doing something a little bit more complicated, like, you know, as I said, with the dwarves, with characters that had sort of very specific accents or tonalities to them, to their voices, I will sometimes refer back to the previous recordings just to make sure I'm doing it right.
Yeah, especially because the dwarves, it's five of almost the same, but not exactly the same. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then this is something I'm just curious about. A lot of times for writers, they say kind of the trick is to, you sort of write about people you know, but not really enough so that they can sue you for it. No. But what I mean by that is that, because I guess this is probably true for many people in the creative field, but it's interesting to hear if this works also with voice recording, that you're walking in the street and you just pick things up, kind of, and then later on you find that they've kind of made it into your story, in the sense of maybe there was a certain tone that somebody used, or maybe someone acted in a certain way, and then you kind of bring that sort of action as a quirk to one of your characters, you know, that kind of idea. So as a voice actor, are you picking up voices like that, like the tone of someone at a bus stop or someone in a supermarket, and you're like, you're hearing it and you're just like kind of filing it away into your brain system, and then one day you're like, oh, I need a character that's like this, that reminds me of the lady at the grocery store, I'm going with that voice, and then you just take it from there?
Sort of. I don't know that I've ever actually necessarily done something like that with an average member of the public. Although there have been a few times where I've been like going to a store or going through a drive-thru or something like that, and the person I'm interacting with has like a really crazy, interesting accent that I've never heard before, and like I'm really tempted to like stop everything and be like, tell me where your voice came from. I need to know. One of the things that I do find myself doing as far as picking up tricks and things like that here and there is there are loads of other audiobook recorders that I'm a huge fan of. And there are loads and loads of actors and TV and movie scenes and things like that that really stick in my mind, either certain characters or certain voices or certain moments. And I find myself picking up bits and pieces a lot from them. And one of my favorite things to do is, as I probably just pointed out, is picking up new accents. There was one particular narrator that I was a huge fan of. I'm still a huge fan of his, actually. His name's Saul Reichlin. He's done a few things for Black Library, for Games Workshop, and they do new audiobooks all the time. And he had chosen to do a couple of books with a lot of characters using this one particular kind of accent that I'd never heard it before. At least I mean, not realized I'd heard it before, but it was a really, really unique sounding voice. And I remember tracking him down on Twitter one time and actually asking him, what accent was that? It ended up being a very specific version of West African that I'd never heard before. And I was just like, that is fascinating. And I found myself almost looking for excuses to try and work that into stuff because it has such an interesting tone quality to it that's almost like nothing else I've ever heard. So it's just like, you know, it was very, very interesting finding out where those things come from. But yeah, you pick up bits and pieces to add to your toolkit everywhere you go. And one of the beautiful things about acting is that, you know, art imitates life, as they say. And literally, that is the job of acting, is to be the art that imitates life. So
yeah,
you find yourself taking everything from everywhere at every available opportunity.
Yeah. I think it was our drama teacher in high school. I didn't specifically take drama, but it was probably one of the years that, like, this is the elective everyone will take. And mm-hmm. he said that he was once at his friend's house, and I think the parents were English, and he unconsciously started imitating their accent, like speaking back to them in their accent. Have you ever found yourself doing that?
All the time.
Oh, no. So how do people take that? Are they usually offended? Or they look at you like, what did you just do?
It depends on how good-natured they are. It is my general experience that you, especially if you don't know someone super well, you probably don't want to start using their accent back at them. They will think that they are being made fun of.
Yes.
However, it's a common practice. I mean, you've probably heard this all the time from people who have lived in one part of the United States and then moved to another part that has a totally different accent profile. Like, you know, I'm from the Midwest and I sound like it. But, you know, I've known loads of people from my neck of the woods who have either temporarily or because they were born there, spent a lot of time living in one of the southern states where there's a distinct accent. And, you know, you spend enough time around that sort of thing, you pick it up unconsciously and you start using it. You don't even realize you're doing it until someone says, when did your voice change?
Yeah.
It's a natural human tendency to do stuff like that. Humans are interesting primates in that we constantly try and find ways to continuously adapt to the group dynamics that we're around. And one of the ways we do that is by adopting vocal patterns of the people around us.
Yeah, it's almost like the vocal version of like what our blood does in different temperatures, the way we can acclimate to different climates, mm-hmm. being warm-blooded. So that's an interesting, I have to think about that more. That's very interesting. So you have your book and you got whatever the section you're working on. What does your actual recording process look like?
It varies depending on the timeline, but in general, the way I prefer to do things is I will read through the whole book at least one time before I get started. That is first and foremost. I really don't feel comfortable trying to do someone's book going into it completely cold. It's never a good idea. So read the whole book through once, just so that I know what's going on, I know what the story is going to be, I have a good idea of who the characters are, and sometimes books are not as easily delineated as yours was in, you know, nice, even chapters. Sometimes, you know, the text is not really separated much at all, but I try and break it down into workable pieces, and then it's really just sort of climb into the booth and record straight through. And I'm not sure how many other voice actors do it, but I don't have an editor. I'm doing all of the production work on my end by myself. What I end up doing is I'll run through whatever portion that I'm recording at a time, not stopping the recorder or anything like that for any mistakes that I make or to do multiple takes or anything like that. So, you know, sometimes I will produce a piece of raw recorded footage essentially for a chapter that's two or three times longer than what the finished product ends up being. So, you know, for instance, in Heart of a Hunter, there are several chapters whose timestamps are close to an hour. When those were raw, they were close to 90 minutes to 2 hours long. And then once I've got the piece finished, I'll go back through it and cut out the stuff that doesn't work and, you know, rekey everything so that it's so that the timing and the flow works right. And obviously, when it comes to doing things like corrections, I try to isolate the correction to just the part that needs fixing as opposed to having to redo whole sections, because otherwise it just becomes a majorly time-consuming process. Because the one thing I have learned is that it takes about 3 to 4 times as long to edit something as it did to record it. At least that's my experience.
Yes, I think a lot of people don't realize how long the editing process is.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it would be so daunting, but then you go, oh god, this is gonna take forever.
Yeah, you're like, why is the sun setting? I started this a few hours ago. Why? Where is the sun at this point? Yeah.
Yeah, that's why so many chapters of your book came in sometime between 2 and 4 in the morning.
So if we're talking about a 9-hour book, mm-hmm. I think the book came in a little bit over 9 hours, and then, which again, 9 very worthy hours of listening to, if I haven't plugged it enough, but let's say 9-ish hours, so your original audio for that would have been at least 3 times the amount of that, and then another 3 times the amount of that for editing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing the math in my head right now, but it's a big number. That's a lot of hours. Wow.
Yeah.
And then when you're recording, is part of the reason of going straight through also because once your voice is like sounding a certain way that day, that hour, or whatever, you got to keep the cadence going, or just because we're just going to knock it out?
Again, it's mostly because since I'm working alone, I don't have a system in place to rapidly stop a recorder or to remove what would otherwise be, you know, large sections of dead air or things like that if I have to stop for any reason and go take care of something for a minute or two. And, you know, obviously if I make a mistake, there's no one there to either, you know, cut that out and just give me nothing but good takes. Like if I was doing this in a professional studio where someone was potentially only recording just the takes I was doing for specific lines or for specific portions, the editing process would probably take a whole lot less time. But again, yeah, because I'm doing it all by my lonesome here, it takes a little bit of effort just because I don't have the opportunity or the tech to do the immediate paring down that would be necessary for something like that. So yeah, that I'm having to take everything raw and just sort of work with it after the fact. Now, some of the stuff about that is easier to deal with than others, like cutting out sections of dead air, that doesn't take any time. But editing fine detail, that can actually be what kills it time-wise.
Yeah, this is why people take on interns.
Yeah.
We solved it. And then just because this was a Snow White retelling, did you ever have a thought in your head of, you know, Snow White would be a better story if X, Y, or Z occurred? Or do you ever have been like that? Or you're just like, oh, this looks like fun. Okay, I'll take it on.
You know, to be honest, Snow White, of all the old fairy tales, is probably the only one to which I've never really paid a lot of attention.
Perfect!
And I find that actually really interesting. Of all of the, say, major fairy tales that got turned into Disney movies, yes, Snow White is my least favorite.
That's so funny.
But especially with Heart of a Hunter, what I found myself really connecting with was Damian himself. And this almost sort of separated figure who's sort of watching this whole thing unfold in front of him, as opposed to being, and I mean, obviously he's still directly involved, but, you know, he feels a little bit like he's kind of an outsider. And just all the stuff that he goes through and all of the ways in which he succeeds and fails felt very true to life, and also his emotional arc also felt very familiar to me. This whole not really being able to express oneself very clearly really was a resonating thing for me. And yeah, I don't know that there's anything that I would say I would add or remove from a story like Snow White, but I will say that reading through your book, there were lots of things added that I had not anticipated but was happy to find.
Oh, nice. Yay. That's cool. It's actually funny that you said just something that difficulty with expressing himself, and you kind of related to that. And just to hear an actor say that is kind of funny. Or ironic, I guess you could say. And especially because the way you recorded it, everything is so expressive. There's no... It's so good. Okay, so I think we've said that already, but I don't know, I'll keep saying it.
By all means.
Yeah. I don't know if I push it enough, but it was such a great job. I'm so excited for it. So one thing that you get a lot with either readers or writers is that sometimes we'll know what a word is, but we won't necessarily know how to pronounce it because we're readers, right? So we learned the word through reading it in text. Mm-hmm. Have you found either for yourself or working with other actors, do you see that maybe in the flip side, that because you're always speaking, you might actually know how to pronounce more words than you actually know how to use? Or does that make sense?
I think I know what you're asking.
Okay.
I mean, we ran into that a couple of times, actually, didn't we, where we were going through it and I ended up using pronunciations for things from overseas as opposed to how most Americans are used to hearing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is actually one of the advantages of English, is that since it's not really technically one language, it's kind of a mishmash of a whole bunch of languages. There's a lot of leeway in what you can say and how you can pronounce things without technically being wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, there have definitely been times where, as an actor, I have found myself being able to either access or remember or use words that are not really commonplace, but I may not necessarily be able to define them, let alone spell some of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, English is a weird language. What can I say?
Yeah. Well, just because speaking so much, it's almost like you have so many words at your disposal, but it's like a vocal use versus like a written use. So
yeah.
For me, that's so interesting because, sure, I know a lot of words, but if you ask me to pronounce them, I'd probably get half of them wrong.
Yeah.
This is what it is. This is what we have to deal with. So we always wrap up with this fill in the blank of, I really like it when writers or stories or actors or directors, whatever noun you want to use there, do X, and I really don't like it when they do X. So how would you fill in the blank for that?
Okay, so I really like it when a writer, producer, director, whoever, a person in charge of a project, I really love it when they know what they want to have happen with their product. I really, really hate when someone wants you to produce content for them, but they give you no direction. And especially in situations where it feels like they probably should be giving you some,
yeah,
it can get really frustrating. Now, I'm the kind of actor that really kind of likes to be told what people want to hear. I'm not necessarily great at coming up with full-blown story arc choices entirely on my own. But I've had directors before, and heck, even as a voice actor, I've had authors before who were really just not clear about the direction they wanted things to go. And the reason, as a voice actor, I find that frustrating is because if you're going to record something and go through the process of editing something, and as we've already established, take all of this time to produce a piece of audio, and you hand it to someone and they say, oh, well, I was kind of hoping you would do something different with this character. And it's like, well, you probably should have mentioned that before I got started. And another thing that I can't stand is when a director or a project lead essentially doesn't treat the people working under them with, you know, the kind of basic respect for their job that they deserve. And I've run into that a few times in the stage. Not so much in the audiobook world, because most authors, especially when you're dealing directly with an author as opposed to like through a company or something like that, most authors are just so thrilled that someone is doing their book that they're just balls of excitement.
Yeah.
and that's always fun to work with. But yeah, otherwise, I really love it when someone has a firm idea of what it is they want their product to sound like and tells me so. And I really can't stand it when someone doesn't even bother to keep in regular contact.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes from the author or the director, I guess, you almost don't even know what you're looking for until you hear it. But that's like asking someone, like, what are you in the mood of? And they're like, I don't know, anything. And you're like, well, that's not helpful either. Again, pick. Anything can be anything. That's not giving me, you know, that everything is not one. You can't record everything at the same time. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, one more question. Are you still reading a lot or doing audiobooks, kind of where you get most of your reading in? Or do you listen to a lot of audiobooks?
Yeah, I still like having a physical book in front of me from time to time. For the kinds of sort of trashy sci-fi that I find myself reading most of the time, I have found a particular company produces most of the audiobooks from that same group of books, and they tend to hire out most of that work to the same subgroup of actors, all of whom are fantastic and all of whom I love listening to. So I just, more often than not, especially with that group of books and group of producers and actors, I'm always sort of reaching into the same pool, but I love listening to them. So yeah, I will reach for an audiobook before a regular book sometimes. I mean, I actually don't think there's been a day that's gone by for like the last 5 years where I haven't listened to some portion of an audiobook at least once a day.
Wow, that's fantastic. Like, yay, how reading happens. Yay for reading.
Yeah.
Or listening.
Yeah, reading is good. Read, people.
And that is our message to you that we will end off with. Well, Nate, thanks so much. It was so great to speak with you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure working with you. The book was amazing, and I can't remember having as good a time working on an audiobook in quite a few years, so thank you for all of that. And I'm very, very proud of the work we've done.
This was a bonus episode of Oh My Word podcast featuring voice actor Nathan Weiland. To find out more about Nathan and his work, please check the link in the episode notes. To find out more about Oh My Word podcast and keep track of all the great stuff we're up to, please follow us on Instagram at Oh My Word podcast, or subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts, or find us on YouTube. You can also find out more about us by checking us out at eltenenbaum.com. Music is by Tim Burke. Thanks so much for joining us. Catch you next time.